Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is the 30th of the 5th month, 2025. It is a Friday evening and the time is 21:06. My name is the Matriarch and I am your host for this lovely, lovely evening, ladies and gentlemen. So we're continuing with our conversation of yesterday, am I? Because vele yesterday we didn't get to finish it because it was just so litty. It was so litty that we didn't get to finish it, but we are going to finish what we started because there's just somebody out there that's like, yeah, but Matriarch, you didn't even finish the conversation of yesterday. And I don't know why you are treating me like this. And you know, I don't want to be a hater or nothing. I don't want to be one of those chicks that's known for haterism. I don't want to be that. I want to be better than that. I want to be like a nice person, you know, that finishes topics. And interacts with their audience in a polite and loving manner. So if you would like to participate in our conversation this lovely Friday, the number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio in case you would like to call us in case you would like to buzz us up, in case you would like to participate in our endeavors today, please do call us. The number in studio is 083-288-401. So ladies and gentlemen, the question was, whose responsibility is it to teach the girl child about their body, to teach the boy child about their body? Is it the responsibility of uticha? Is it the responsibility of, is it the responsibility of the parents? Whose responsibility is it? Is it society's, is it society's role to play in this girl child or boy child's life to teach them about their bodies and how their bodies are changing? Now, ladies and gentlemen, check, ne? Personally, from a woman perspective, I'm a 30 odd years. I'm a 33-year-old woman. I'm turning 34 this year. And I can honestly tell you with all my heart, inside my heart, with my two hearts that I have inside one heart, I can tell you that I never had the conversation around it. I never had the conversation of what is going to happen to your body. I've never had the conversation of what is happening to your body. I have never had the conversation of what is going to happen to your body. So I've never had the present, the future, and the past tense ever happen in terms of conversations about the body. I didn't have the boob talk. I just got basically a bra. It was even my older brother that went to go and buy me the bra. I don't know. I think he figured that, at some point I must get a bra or something because it was also the least of my concerns. I was not thinking about it, but I used to watch the other kids or the other girls in my class wear their bras and I was still most now in the t-shirt under the school uniform. Now I'm one of those parents that is I'm one of those parents that is making my child that has new nuggets coming in, ne? I'm sadly one of the parents that is also just doing the same. I think it's so much easier for me, I guess, to just wear a t-shirt under the school uniform. So that is what I'm also enforcing there in my house. And it's not a good thing. I know I should have the conversation, but I just didn't realize that the conversation is so hard. You know, when you anticipate the future, you always anticipate preparation. You always anticipate that you are going to be prepared for whatever is going to come. And when it does come, you're not going to be overtaken by what you're going through, you understand? So you always anticipate that, okay, when the sex talk comes, I'm going to be prepared for the sex talk, right? And when the body conversation comes, I'm going to be prepared for it. And roughly or sadly, none of us actually prepare for that conversation. Nobody actually prepares for that conversation. And that's the harsh truth. Nobody prepares for the conversation. Everybody, Everybody anticipates preparation, but nobody actually prepares. We all say that we can go to war, but nobody is actually preparing for war. Our soldiers are drinking their beer, my dear. They are at Kangwena. They are drinking their beer. They are enjoying their lives. They are living it up, right? Living la vida loca. Our police officers are also just doing the same. I don't know. Maybe the police is better than, I don't know. But if anything had to cut in this country, I don't think that any of our people would truly be prepared, especially the ones that are supposed to be at the front line. At the front line, we are not supposed to be having the Navy SEALs. We're not supposed to be having, you know, the Secret Service people. We're not supposed to be having, you know, the Air Force and what. We're not supposed to be having those people. We're supposed to be having our regular day to day guys. But our regular day to day guys, ne? I feel like they're gonna go through alcohol withdrawal syndrome while they're at war, and then they'll have to be drunk. Wow. So I don't know. Everybody says that, no, I'm going to have to talk, especially when it comes to how our parents raised us and how we assume we want to raise our children and what we practice. We all practice all the easy stuff. We do all the easy things, you know. We get our kids in a good home. We give them a conducive environment, which means it's an environment that does not have violence, that does not have manipulation, torture, trauma. We eliminate those things, right, to put these children in a better place. Because I think that many of us that came from settings like this, that's the one thing that we don't want for our kids. So we try our level best to put them in a position where they don't have to deal with, you know, drunk mother, drunk father, you know, drugs, beatings. We try by all means. But then there are deeper conversations that I never had, because we are most doing every single easy thing in the book. We're doing it. Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening, mother.
Good evening, my darling. How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Where are you? I think I'm the only person in the world that's allowed to ask those types of questions. Where are you?
You're the only person in the world that actually asks that question.
Really? Because everybody's scared of you. I'm not scared of you. I ain't afraid of you. I'm going to ask you every chance I get. Where are you?
I'm at home. I'm working.
You're at home doing what on a Friday?
My girl, that is cold. I'm in my blanket.
Mm-hmm.
Does that count? Don't worry, I'm not next to anyone.
So did anybody have the puberty talk with you?
In my life, no.
Yeah. Really? Are you gonna have the puberty talk with your kids one day?
With my son, probably, yeah.
What does that conversation sound like? Tell us, run us through it. Maybe we can pick up tips, especially for us that have double trouble. Don't know if you should tell the father. Please talk to him about his body. Yeah, how are you gonna do it? Give us tips, my dear.
Honestly, I have no idea. I really don't know. I feel like the main topic that I'm gonna go with is just how to respect a woman.
How to respect a woman? And then he's going to get his respectable woman pregnant. He's got a respectable egg. He's going to get his egg pregnant. Then what?
I don't know. I really don't know. That's something that I never thought of. So honestly, I don't know. I really don't know.
But when are you gonna know, though?
I don't know. It'll just hit me, I think.
You think that these things just hit others? You think that we as parents just get hit? We are in.
No, I really don't know. What's your opinion?
I don't know. Because right now, I have an 8-year-old, and she's got ungumuturu on the chest, right? And all I'm doing is running. Oh, just wear a t-shirt under. It's pain. It's woo. Bye. I'm going to work. Like, isn't it early to go to work? I know.
Does she ask questions?
No, she doesn't ask questions. But I feel like I also don't want to be those uncomfortable moms where she can't ask me because I'm so uncomfortable. But I didn't have the body talk. Everybody had the sex talk. Nobody had the body talk, guys. No one. Like, there's nobody that can tell me, so when I was 12 or when I was 13, my dad sat me down and he spoke about my body. Or my mom sat me down and spoke about my body. Huh? Even us, we just had to figure it out.
Isn't that something that they actually teach in school?
Okay, but what did you learn, though? Okay, what did you learn about boys, then?
About boys?
Like, honestly.
A whole lot of them.
Like what? I have a pen and a paper, my dear.
I have no idea what
it means. You don't know also, ne, what you learned. Apparently, they taught you, but you don't know.
Because the thing is, I had to experience that, you know, it's one thing being taught, as far as I know, and it's another thing when, you know, it's,
when you experience it.
When you experience it, thank you. Yeah.
Okay, but what did they say is going to happen to you? Just be honest, nobody told you nothing.
No one told me anything.
It's true, like, if they taught you in school, then what did they say? Because, I feel like nobody talks about it, man.
I think we do, are we supposed to know how to feel about it?
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like that would be the that would be the ultimate thing to talk about. Because people should also tell you how you should feel, how you should react, and whether it's normal or not, whether it's the same or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
bro. Me, I'm just trying to figure out how are we going to do this, guys.
Enlighten me.
My dear, I guess we just have to start with the whole system. Okay, so maybe when our kids start, like, having signs of, or when their friends, when they start having signs of changing, maybe we should talk about, like, so your body is going to change. Because I think you would have appreciated not being shocked. Every single time you look at your body, you are in shock. Like, now you've got hair under your armpits. You're like, oh.
Okay, let me just point out, man. Mm-hmm. In my personal opinion, I feel like for a guy, things are more simple, straightforward. Hair under the armpits, facial hair, pimples, yada, 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 everything else.
Mm-hmm.
All of that.
Mm-hmm.
For women, though, it's a different story.
Okay.
I think that one is a bit more.
But there are other things that you guys don't go through, that you guys go through, that you guys don't acknowledge. Like, you guys also get breast things.
Men.
You guys also get breast things. You guys also get, like, pain at the breasts. Maybe it's coming. Maybe it's coming.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay.
I never say never, but I don't think so.
Okay, so and wet dreams?
dreams, yes, those can happen. Those come with arousal.
They come with what?
Arousal, increased arousal.
Okay, you are aroused about what?
Which I realizing that...
What is arousing you, my son? How do I even answer that?
I don't know. Like, fuck, you just realize that girls are becoming women.
How?
I don't know. You guys are growing up. People are growing up now.
So you guys are aroused by people that are changing also. I'm asking right there, I'm asking. So what arouses you people is that people are changing also.
So that's one way to put it. Not exactly, but it's one way.
Okay.
But not exactly, but it's almost there.
But you guys also have to be told. You guys also need a pep talk, boss. Because we don't know how much I want to make money. Oh. And my father, I want that.
Yeah, but I mean, you tell a person that they don't smell very pleasant.
Eh.
I think it's an insult now.
Yeah, but that's why I'm saying that I feel like all of us deserve the puberty talk. But nobody, like, apparently, you now queer, I'm on women.
I know.
It's true.
But I feel like that's what an avoidant person would say.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is actually avoiding something, knowing fully well that they're supposed to give that topic to the kid.
Wow. Hmm. You lost the man. Oh, now, karane epiko wanje. Tandi koshongai.
Then you find touch.
Tandi koshongai.
Okay.
It's a nick.
From a mom's point of view, from a mother's point of view.
Yeah.
When is it necessary to have that talk?
I feel like we need to have that talk when the children are 11. We have the conversation so that we can respect each other's bodies. Yeah. So that other people can learn that other people's bodies are also sacred and they are private. So that you don't find girls that are body shaming you guys for going through puberty. You know, somebody can insult you for having pimples. But it's not even your doing. It's just the phase that you're going through. It's just the season that you're in. And now these girls make you feel so self-conscious and so bad, right? For going through what you're going through. And then it messes with your self-esteem so much that you grow up thinking that you are a person that is ugly.
Yeah.
Most of our issues and our trauma comes from childhood. It doesn't mean it's only in the house that you're having a childhood, right? You're having a childhood even outside. You're still having a childhood experience. So if we can teach what puberty is in boys and girls, and also teach both genders to respect one another, then I think that we can have less hurt people. Because even if you ask people, why do they think that they are ugly? It's usually because some girl that they were feeling all their lives, right? Rejected them in the name of something. It could have been body, it could have been height, it could have been pimples, it could have been skin tone, it could have been anything. So if we can teach the girl child that boys also go through puberty, but their puberty is not like yours. Their puberty shows these signs and these signs and these signs. So you must just be nice to the boy child also. I know he's acting like an animal, but he's an animal. So he's going through things also. He doesn't also understand. Then also with you, you would be more better also. You'd be more better, you'd feel better, especially if the girl that you like doesn't come up to you and notice things like your chest hair and then speaks about it. Because that's the retaliation of something that you're embarrassed of, right? Is aggression and defensiveness and a pompous nature. So if you are already self-conscious about your chest hair that is coming in, you don't know what to do with it. You don't even know what to dress when they come in. Like, why are there so many? And should I cut them? Should I not cut them? Let's say now you're one of those hairy people, right? Maybe it's not even something that you like. You understand? And then this girl notices it. And everybody starts laughing. Then what? It's either you run out of the class crying or you tell her nonsense. You tell her, yeah, I'm a man. Because men are the ones with chest hair. Men. But deep down inside, you know you feel bad. And that's why you can find that there's this guy that is having so much ego and he's so pompous and he's just everything bad. You don't want to associate with him.
Full of himself.
Yeah, full of himself and he's so disrespectful. But it was just birth from somewhere, my dear. So if we can take that one off, then yeah.
But I think when it comes to the talk, I'm more concerned about what to say towards the girl child.
Towards the girl child?
Uh-huh.
Why?
They are more emotional beings, and they're going to have, like, their body goes through a lot more change.
Really?
Especially in the period.
Like what?
During the
periods, you're speaking very soft when you started talking about periods. So during the period, the girls, they are very fragile.
I may be wrong. I may be completely wrong.
But everybody has their own changes, Moss. So we must concern ourselves about our own changes. I don't feel that one should get more preference simply because their genitalia is internal. No, really. I feel like everybody must just get the same treatment and the same affection. So much nicer when we both understand each other. Yeah, it makes more sense there. Or the girl child is suffering because the girl child, you know, the girl child has been through a lot. Her body changes more than men's bodies.
It's always how I personally took it. It might be wrong.
No, it's not wrong for you to feel that way. I'm just saying that it's like that with everything, I guess. Women are not fragile, guys. Like, I want you guys to stop thinking like that. I want you to start thinking of women as powerful beings.
I think that's what I see.
Yeah, they're not fragile, guys. They're not going through a lot.
I know, I'm talking about you.
The only people that go through a lot, ne? Uh-huh. Are people that don't know how to cure their a lot that they're going through. Because if you're paining periods, you just get painkillers and then it's over. And also, why are you paining periods? That means you're not a person that exercises. That means you're unhealthy to some degree.
Really?
Yeah. You need to exercise. You'll never see the gym girlies, ne? Having period pains. Never.
I have a friend of mine that said that once.
Mm-hmm.
That period is not supposed to be painful.
That says that the period is not supposed to be painful, ne?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just supposed to be flow. But most of us are most now trapped in our bodies. So we eat unhealthy, we drink unhealthy, we live unhealthy, and then we don't expect pain. And then we make it an everybody thing. Everybody gets period pains. It's winter, you're walking around barefoot, but you know you have a uterus. Why? You're walking around. This is the same person. The person that's crying period pains is the same person that has never, that has not worn a top, ne? That is longer than her belly button in 2 years. It's on a real. Like, your belly button is outside 90% of the time. How can you not be paining? Everything. Like, it has been 2 years since you covered your belly button. If you're covering your belly button, Shapo is a jersey at your house so that your father doesn't look at you funny. Yeah, but when you're out with other people's fathers.
Yeah.
It's true. When you're out with other people's fathers, my dear, you don't wear a top that's longer than your belly button. So, I know whose problem is it. To be honest,
I don't know that was a cause.
No, there are many causes, but mainly it's an unhealthy lifestyle. Women nowadays are lazy. You don't, like, how come you've never, have you ever seen your mother sitting on the couch period pains?
Like complaining about them all?
Yeah.
Never.
Never, ne? Why? She not a woman.
She has, and she's never pointed them out. I
don't know. No. You've also never seen your mother curled up with a hot water bottle, you know, sitting on the ground somewhere or laying in bed somewhere in the middle of the day. You've never seen it. Not unless she's sick, in the hospital. But at home like this, you've never seen it. Why? Yes. Because she keeps fit. If she's not feeding chickens, she's outside in the field. If she's not what, she's what. There's always something to do. But all of us are Netflixing and chilling, my dear. How can we not be paining? We think that chores, ne, is sweeping in front without moving things. That's cleaning. Yeah. We don't work out. You don't even have to be those hardcore gym girlies.
Just as long as
you must just be active. But you must be intentionally active.
I never knew, honestly.
Even your aunt. Have you ever seen your aunt? Crying period pains. You think they don't menstruate? They do. They give birth to us, so yeah. That only comes if they do that. So, even when you were younger as a child, you've never seen your mom curled up with a hot water bottle and she's laying in bed all day and it's painkillers and period pains. Why? I've never seen my mother suffer period pains.
So basically you're saying
our generation is lazy. That is why we are suffering the way we are suffering.
So period pains are just by, okay, let me not say just, caused by, I mean, just a sign that that person is not fit.
Yeah. Because you never see a gym girlie complaining, Uncle.
I didn't know.
Just as unfit studler chicks and unfit slender chicks, we are the ones, the only ones that are complaining. Us that have not seen, we don't even climb stairs. The thing is, one floor up and we'll take an elevator.
I think I was not paying attention for now.
Yeah.
But if I find someone complaining that they're going through period pain, then they're not fit. They're really not fit. Or they're doing something very wrong.
But you must not also ask your person that is drinking Savannah and judge them. Yeah, they are drinking their beers.
I'll keep that in mind. Oh, man.
You see? So, I went and checked it right now so I can give you a concrete answer. And it says, I asked, can exercise, right, take away period pain? And the answer from the Google is yes. Exercise can help reduce period pain. It's thought to work by releasing beta endorphins, which are natural painkillers, and by helping to burn off prostaglandins, chemicals that cause muscle contraction during menstruation. So we are having muscle contractions, right? So if we work out and we burn off these things, then we would absolutely be fine. But now if you have no contractions all the time, then it will not be painful. How is it not going to be painful? It's going to be painful. Yeah.
Okay. So, is it pain the same as cramps itself?
It's cramps.
Those are the cramps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I was having period cramps. I was having period cramps. My dear, work out. Take a step or two. How?
Nah, then they end up saying that they're too lazy.
Yeah, they're too lazy and now they must also stop complaining with us. I just want a romantic guy. If the things are so painful, then how come you have energy to wake up and go to the door to go and receive the chocolate that the person brought? Ha. You're almost in too much pain. You can't, Moss.
The pain is not enough to keep the chocolate outside the
door. You see? So what does that say?
Man, women are interesting, honestly.
We are.
Both biologically and physically.
They're interesting. They're nice to be around.
Some personality-wise as well.
Yeah.
Not all.
Not all, yeah, just some. Because, well, yeah, we're not finna do that.
Mommy, how are you doing?
Me?
Yes,
I'm doing well. I'm doing actually quite well. I'm exactly where I want to be in this little life of mine. And now I'm just going through the motions. I'm living in my prayer.
Thriving, I hope.
No, definitely thriving. Living in my prayer, Moss. If you pray for something, Moss. I'm living inside there. But I'm a very conflicted person. So right now my conflict is, I don't know how to praise God. Do I say thanks or? How did I do it? Yeah, so that's like a little cat problem right now. Must I don't know, stand outside, yell at the top of my lungs?
I think the fact that you're walking
is already things. Yeah, I'm trying. But I'm good though. I'm living in answered prayers.
When was the last time you called in on the show?
I don't know. You're just out there was living your life.
We're
quiet. Yeah. How are you doing? How's life in you?
Just going one day at a time.
What's happening in your life? Be specific.
Interesting. It's just getting cold.
Okay. School, life. What are you doing?
Right now we're on break. I'm going to start again in June.
And you are studying what? Healthcare?
Occupational health.
Yeah, healthcare. Mm-hmm.
You call it healthcare, really nice.
Like, yeah, like, it is what it is, guys.
Okay, it has to do with healthcare, so you're not too wrong, you're not far off.
I'm just here at the center at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
How's school going?
We're on break right now.
Yeah, but how is it going?
It's going well.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing much, just a few classes. Random, at the random times of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in the morning, sometimes at 10, sometimes at around 4, 3, that's 10.
And how's your home life?
Very conflicting.
Why? How so? Or why so?
How do I explain? You know how families can be, like, way too many people with way too many different opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, guys tend to have very ugly differences, fights and all of that. And, yeah, basically that. And I can't do anything about it, so I can't even complain about it.
Mm.
So I just let it go. But apart from that, I'm good.
What do you intend to do?
Stay away from anything toxic, keep my peace, find my peace. Little by little.
You don't want to address anything?
Not advise, I know. Not right now, no.
I also don't want to address anything. Me also. You are where I am also. I don't want to address anything. I want to be with those that want to be with me. If you don't want to be with me, it's all good also. And that's it.
I'm just sticking to what sticks with me.
Energy
is giving, man.
Ne? Yeah. Kuchishashi. Whoa, guys. I think, and that's why I was talking about, this week I was also discussing, self-sacrifice, right? And I've realized that in many a times we self-sacrifice so much for family and we don't even know it because we think it's obligation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to feel like that.
You will feel like that for a while and then you are eventually going to go. So that's why I'm saying that with your job, look for work in City of Windhoek. Yeah, so you get away from the people. So that you only get to see them once. Imagine you start working and then you still have to live at home because people are going to blackmail you into believing that you need to stay home. But at least if you are working, they can't force you to stay. You'll be like, but the job is there.
And you'll actually, and you'll be far from home.
Mm-hmm. You can even miss holidays. and say that work didn't leave you. And choose who you're going to fraternize with. Like right now, I'm, it's true. Like right now, I'm in a space of, I don't want anything to do with my older brother.
Really?
Yeah. He's abusive. He's verbally abusive and he's a drunk and he is ungrateful and he's filled with jealousy. Like, yeah, he's one of those, like, why did you get two pieces?
Really?
Yeah, he's like that. And I just decided that I don't want that. I want my peace.
So you just decided to stay away?
I did. I decided to stay away. And now my family is, cause we live somewhere else most now with the husband and the children. And now my family keeps hijacking the kids. Like every weekend we're just alone with the men.
Really?
Yeah. They don't really care about the big ones anymore. They care about the small one because the small one is stepping into her element. She's like a clown for them. Because she's small and she's figuring out everything. So the grandmother is like, Mikaela Kenya. And she's ta Kenya, ta Kenya. As it don't care. As it's like, bye. They don't ask us for anything. So it's the, like the kids go, as all we need to do is just drop them off. And that's it. Like even now, long weekend, they've been there for like 2 weeks.
Oh wow.
We went to get the baby though. The days are many. We also want to be gang rad. Huh?
Oh, how old is the baby now?
She's like a year and 6 months.
Oh my gosh, she grew up so quick.
Exactly. She was just in the belly yesterday.
I know, but
and now she's a big girl that goes for weekends.
It's only yesterday when you delivered the news.
Exactly.
When I saw the picture of the feet, I'm like, oh my gosh, she's here.
She's here, the baby.
Oh man.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have a lot on your plate, but you're juggling it all pretty well.
I know. I'm in a very good space, guys. There is nothing more peaceful than your own space, ne? Your own space. Like now my nanny, she has put herself at the post of washing dishes. Yeah. Because the way I spend 30 minutes in that kitchen and come out with a gourmet meal. Shanga de koshuyaha, mami. De like ege. Andi kuku freme shige. What am I defrosting for you? I'm like, how, girl?
She does it.
Yeah.
I think you put her in a good space because you're in a good space.
Mm-hmm. It just follows suit. Like being in a good space allows the environment around you to follow suit. So the only person I don't want to mess with is him. He's toxic. Like he's bad. Like he's bad. Oh, okanayane. He's bad.
Does he reach out to you?
To do what? I won't answer his calls. To do what?
He's really that bad of a person.
To do what? What are we going to talk about?
What about rehab or therapy?
Can a story on Bwana?
Really?
Mm-mm.
In the beginning?
It, like when he's sober, now, he's as quiet as a church mouse, my dear. You'll not even know he's there.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. Or Harukara, here he is, but Kanti has been there for 3 days. Hello, you're here. It's true. And when he's drunk, the things that come out of that child's mouth, I'm telling you. Or something. Yeah, took an anohone, so.
Oh, Those are people that you really cannot trust with any kind of information.
Yeah. It's not even any kind of information, huh? Him himself, he's just like napore mangang kwetu. Like, so he's the only one that I don't want to fraternize with. I don't want to assist. I don't want to do nothing. I don't want to talk. I don't want to stop the car. If he's at his mother's house and the kids are being dropped off, as we stand outside. Run, guys, run, turn the car! Hello! Because he probably wants to come and zula us. Then run! Drive, drive! It's true. But I'll address him one day. I've addressed him a number of times. I'm just done. He must want to change.
The person that is told to change is not the same as the person who wants to change. Eventually. If he gets enough signs and his life hits him hard enough, maybe he'll change.
Maybe.
God forbid, but yeah.
Maybe. What do taranga?
Sounds so nice and you're happy, man.
Ne? I'm telling you, like, whoop,
whoop. My tips are even
ne? I know.
You can't do that.
To enjoy the shit. No, I didn't dinner, ne? Dina was afraid of my food.
Really?
She said it looked foreign. Said, don't be afraid of the food. Eat. It wasn't foreign. It was just, it's not something that you see every day.
Another day I come back to Zinta. With day I come back to Zinta, I ain't gonna stop by it.
You should. You must come and eat. Like, I think that's my love language, feeding everybody.
Wanditere
gondi hore mama kitchen.
That will not mind.
I'm telling you. So now, in our house, everybody, every time we go into a shop and people are buying something, because they all came, like my relatives are all at my mom's all these days, like for the past 2 weeks, they are chilling there because my other aunt came from the north as well. So they're all there. So now they're asking things like, oh, I'm going to randoka, oh, I'm like, no. They're like, hey, shashomuna. I'm like, yeah.
They know you that well.
My dear, we are very few in our house. So there's no reason for our bride pack to finish. No,
those ones that are worth
3,000,
but it's just like a tiny, tiny little
piece. I'm one of those ones that I feel like having chicken meatballs. Yeah, so you don't need 7 pieces of chicken. You just need like 2 good breasts. We are only 4 big people. No, it's not even 4 big people. It's like the 3 of us. It's the nanny, it's me, it's the tate. The 3 of us. And then 2 small children. And then the baby that is, if she's eating, she's eating. If she's not eating, there's no force. So, it's just 2 chicken breasts.
You sound like you're sorted. Like you're sorted.
I am. That's why I'm saying I'm living in answered prayers. That's why I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know, am I supposed to say thank you 10 times? Am I supposed to fast or what? Like, I don't know, man. You know, you pray for something for such a long time and then it happens. And then you're like, okay, so now what? Do I need new dreams?
I think a thank you to him is all that you call it, all that he needs.
Yeah. We are trying, my dear.
Okay, let me just speak to your other listener.
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you so much, my darling.
It was nice talking to you.
It is nice talking to you always. I love you so much.
I love you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, today we are talking. We're almost just talking about anything. Today's Friday, guys. So you can come and then we can do the topic and then we can talk about other things also. It's all good. But initially we were talking about, you know, puberty. We were talking about body changes. Do we actually have the conversation with our children about body and what is going to happen to your body and how it's going to change and how you must be in your mannerisms? When you become a big girl, when you become a big boy, or is it just one of those things where we are thrown into the ocean and then they hope we can swim? And when we swim, they are so happy for us. Like, ah, wow. She made it to the other side, bruh. I was never as bad at it, man. Like, woo, baby girl. You know, is it one of those, where we are just hoping for the better? Because I know that I think I'm also the hoping for the better kind of people. And I never pictured myself to be hoping for the better kind of person. But I guess that it is, we live and we learn, and now we are in the space. I know exactly what to do. I'm smart. I know exactly what to do, but to do it is something that is bringing out the uncomfortable within myself. It's that one, like, yo. Bringing out the uncomfortable. Now I'm going to sit with my child. So I'm like, okay, so you're going to start getting hair. Because these are people that I breastfeed and put. You guys are babies for life. In my life. In my life. In my life. So, I don't know. But I will have the conversation. I'll have your conversation. So let's talk about the cycle. Let's talk about, after the break, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to talk about what happens in puberty. And we are going to talk about it because we have to talk about it. In case your mom is not going to talk about it, in case your dad is not going to talk about it, we're going to talk about it. And it's most now easier for me to mother you than it is to mother those ones there. But those ones are 8 years old, guys. So we can't really mother them without like damaging their innocence. So, but I guess I'll have the conversation after the holiday. So we'll talk about the new developments in the body and we'll take it from there, because she also sees herself as a big girl. Yeah. With other big kids. Yeah. And then the boys are running all day and the girls are like playing, I don't know, makeup and playing talk. Like, but oh my goodness. So we're going to be like, what? Like, where? And you're like, how? Oh, is that the game? The game is like that. It's intense. But ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go for a quick breather. And we will be right back after the advertisement break. And then we are going to continue with the conversation around puberty for the young lady. Puberty in girls is the period of growth and development when their bodies mature and they become able to reproduce. So this is the maturity and the development of a young lady and what happens to the body. So we are having the period talk. We are having the development talk. We're having the puberty talk around the girl child first. Maybe we can also like tackle the boy child, but first we'll start with the girl child.
Tired of being stuck in queues or left on hold? Our online sign-up lets you get the connection you need in just a few minutes. Simply head to paratus.africa/Namibia and press the online sign-up button. Then choose from our exciting ranges of fiber, Sky-Fi or mobile LTE products. Fill in the application form and you're already done. Of course, you'll also enjoy free installation on your new package. Sign up online today to enjoy effortless connectivity.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Oulio mnangeshefa ni wahara kushivifa oma akuro ye kupitira muhurike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mkuro olongaha. Ningi kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahe tatu imwe, heali imwe, ne heali, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwambirewa konorahe tatu natu, mbali ohe tatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Nenge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, today is month end. So you guys are tailoring your money. You guys are chopping your money, but it is all well. It is all well. Because people are also eating other people's money, but okay. So, what happens in a, who's supposed to have this conversation? I feel like it's parents that are supposed to have the conversation, and also, not the community, because the community might have this dirty perverted man that wants to teach girls about their bodies, or a dirty perverted woman that wants to teach boys about their bodies. We could say that it's both the teacher and the parent's responsibility to teach the body, teach the child the body. So the number in studio is 083-288-401. So what happens? What are the changes that happen inside your body as a young girl? First of all, breasts develop. Yeah, that's what comes first. You don't get pubic hair. You don't get other things first. First, apparently, it's breast develop. Now remember, we are different and we have different anatomies. So at the end of the day, right? Just because your friend's breast came in doesn't mean that you are what? You are disabled or something like that. Oh no. It just means that your growth is just a little, it's slower than hers, or her growth is just faster, or, you know, everybody is different. So we mature and we develop at different paces and embrace that. So the first thing that happens, sometimes the first thing that happens is breasts come in. Other people, it's hair. Other people, it's what? Other people, it's what? Right? So we'll just go down with the chart that says what is supposed to develop in a concept of majority, not minority, but majority. Majority of people, right? Their breasts develop first. So small breast bumps begin to form, followed by future development. So it's first of the small lumps that are on the chest there, and then sometimes those lumps go away, right? Sometimes they go away, and then the real ones come in a bit later. That is why I'm holding back on the bra situation and the bra conversation with my 8-year-old, because she is, I feel like they're gonna go. I saw her today, or I think I also just look at her from head up only. but that, those are my own fears. But I'm working on it, guys. I'm here. I'm in therapy with you guys. I'm working on it. I'm just waiting to see after the holiday if we'll still have them. If we'll still have them, then we'll have the conversation. But the first thing that develops is small breasts or small breast lookalikes. And then the second one is pubic and underarm hair growth. Hair growth in these areas signals the onset of puberty. So this is how you know, you are in full swing of the puberty, when hair starts to grow. Now, I don't understand why, because 90% of us spent our whole entire lives just trying to get rid of them, because it's not something that is hygienic. But when hair starts to grow, you must also learn how to groom, right? You need to learn how to groom. You need to learn how to take care of it, because hair carries dirt, ne? So thereby the showering, thereby the roll-on, thereby powdering up. And if you don't have these things, ne? Then try a little bit of powder. And then if you don't have powder also, eh, and you are listening to me tonight and you're like, oh my goodness, Mitriak, what am I going to do? Under the arms, ne? You can take a little bit of soap and you can just apply it and let it air dry. If you let it air dry for a little while, then it just dries up. Then you can guarantee that you're going to smell like soap, but it's better than smelling like sweat, right? So let's try there. But at the pubic hair, please don't put anything there, ne? The one inside, internal, the one under the underpants, right? Don't put anything there, because you might risk an infection if you're a young girl. So don't put anything there. Okay, and then the third one is growth spurts. Girls experience a rapid increase in height and typically peak around ages 12, according to what they are saying within the body anatomy people. So all of a sudden you have always been short, and then when you hit 12, you just become a giant. You just become taller, or you just become, your foot grows, and this is what happens. So you develop like fast. You develop like you wake up taller because you don't notice that you are getting tall, and it just happens, right? So if you are looking at your jeans and the jeans are all of a sudden a bit shorter, it's because you're growing, okay? It's nothing to be alarmed about. It's because you're growing. And then step number 4 is menstruation, which is the first period. The first menstrual period marks the onset of a girl's reproductive capacity or capability. So now, when you get your first period, so the period is blood, right? It's blood that comes out of the pum pum, and this just means that you are now, this is why when you get the periods, nobody really has a conversation about breasts, about being tall, about everything else, because, you don't run the risk on anything. But with menstruation, this means that you have the capabilities of birthing a child. If your eggs are fertilized, if you have coitus and then you get pregnant, you can get pregnant. Okay. So this is why people want to talk about boyfriends and they want to talk about take care of yourself. This is the reason, because you are now capable of reproducing and manufacturing a child. So that's why people are iffy about this particular number four. And then number five is body shape changes. So all of a sudden, the first menstrual period comes, and then body fat distribution changes. So you used to be a person that is very leveled, or you used to be a girl child that is very leveled, you know. Nothing is really happening there by the body. You guys can just run, you guys can just do whatever. And then all of a sudden you become more curvaceous, because now the fat is being distributed in different areas. So now you have a tushy, and you have a little bit of flab in the arms and the stomach also, and then the hips and the thighs. This is where the body decides where it's going to start distributing fat to. So enkene otari ketako, enkene otari kwetunji, enkene otari to the inner thighs, the outer thighs, all the thighs, it's thigh. So that's what happens. And it now shapes you and gives you this body that you like also. You like it. You like the way it's looking. Eh, kafleta mi. Eh, nice thing. Oh. I remember Shindani no memory to Grace. Flick. Okay. And then, right, so you're enjoying. Not very much the menstrual part, because it's really different and it's really messy. So I don't advise you on your first period to use tampons or lilets. I advise you to use pads. And then I don't advise you to use pads without wings, because the wings are the ones that stabilize on your panties. Okay? So you get a packet of pads with wings, and then you lock the panty into the pad. That's how you put it on. I hope you guys can imagine what I'm saying. So don't also get scented. Scented means pads that smell nice. Now you might think that, oh, this thing, it's smelling. Mara. You might be thinking that this thing is smelling, so I would prefer to get the scented ones. The problem is that it is your first period. This is the first time that you're doing it. You don't know if you are allergic to it or not. Now you go and try this one, and then you are allergic to it. It's your first time, and it either things swell up or it causes a Kamini infection there, and it's just uncomfortable. So try unscented pads with wings. And I always say, if you are a thick girl, then the bigger one is better, because then it covers the whole entire perimeter. If you are a bit smaller in frame, in size, then you can take the smaller types of pads, because then it will not make your step and your walk uncomfortable. You always need, one, it is your pad, two, it is your panties, three, it is a hot pants or a stepping. So those are things, engage. Right? You must have period panties and outside panties. Okay? And then also, one of the other things that you must always do as a young lady is carry one extra pad inside your handbag. We are not carrying handbags because we are big girls and we are big women and what. There's always a pad inside, because you never know what is going to happen. Even if you know your cycle, you carry it for safety. It will always make you feel comfortable. Even if you go to the bathroom and you notice that your period has started, you can always put on a pad wherever you are. But if you don't have it, you would have to sit in the bathroom and you have to wait for some girl that most probably listens to my show that has an extra pad in her bag to give you a pad. Now, if she gives you this pad, right, then it's going to be great, right? But then she might be using the scented ones and you never know. Or even worse, there's no one with a pad. And then you are stuck with the toilet paper shenanigans. Now, the toilet paper shenanigans, we call them shenanigans because what happens is that toilet paper has dust. And these dust particles, right, they are not great for a sensitive area such as that one. So you need to safeguard that area. And then we can talk about washing while you're on your menses, your period. If you're going to be washing while you're on your period, remember that soap is a no-go. You shouldn't soap up. If you're soaping up, you're only soaping up the areas that are not the inside of it. So only on the top, right? And only on the top part of it. The top part of it is this one that is at the start of your panties and just there. Just there at the top of your panties, and you don't go inside, you don't go internal, and you don't go digging for stuff and all of that with soap. No, you don't do that. And also, you just take clean water. So if you are bathing, for example, in a basin, and you go with Ndinikoka Yogero, I would advise that you first put in your first chunk of water where you just wash your pum pum and wash it clean. You know, wash it clean. Don't be afraid to touch, okay? Don't be afraid to touch. Just wash it the same way you would wash a sick person, okay? Just wash it to make sure that nothing stays inside there, because we also don't want, we don't want blood trapped there to create odors. Because I think that you have heard when people say that girl smells, right? That girl smells is usually only once a month she smells. She doesn't smell every day. So why does she smell that once a month? It's because of what is happening to her that once a month, okay? So you clean up nicely. You can start with there. Then you pour out the water. Then you can now start with the process of washing your body. And also, I'm going to tell you this because it is what it is. You have to take out. Sometimes it just stays there at the entrance. So maybe you can put a finger and then just clean it out. Okay. Just pull it out a little bit and then you see if, Mara, you're not going to put like a fist or whatever. It's just a finger with clean water. Okay. Just to make sure that everything is clean. So that's what happens. And then with your pad situation, you must start to recognize if you are bleeding a lot, it is not because you're going to die, okay? It just means that you've got a heavier flow. Now, with a heavier flow and all of that, you guys have TikTok and all of this. So you can now go and research, which, okay, there's TikTok or there's so much you can learn from the internet. It's not just for stalking boys and watching videos. There's so much you can learn. So if you've got heavy flow, for example, and you would like to stop, or you stop your flow from being heavy, I've noticed that most people that have heavy flows are also people that don't exercise. You have to be, as a young girl, you have to be active. Stop being lazy. You have to be active. Just jog. Once in a while, just jog. Once in a while, just walk. Just exercise your body. It will keep you young. And I know that you want to be old, but it will keep you young. It will keep your body fit. And then it will also minimize a few things, like pains when it comes to your period. And then also your flow when it comes to your periods. And then there'll be smooth sailing. And last but not least, on the number four section, right? You need to be changing your pad. I know that times are hard and the economy what, and your parents only bought you that one packet of pad, so you can't be just wasting it, but I guarantee you, when that thing gets full, it gets full, ne? when that thing gets full, it's like a sponge. When you put a sponge in water, it absorbs all the water. But when you touch the sponge, the water comes out. And that is why, like she has messed on herself. It's usually because the pad is not worn correctly or the pad is full. So change your pad regularly. If you're part of the Tempon and the Lilith gang, after 4 hours. After 4 hours, you must change your Lilith. You can come and tell me that, yeah, but matriarch, the packet says 8 hours. I'm telling you, do it 4 hours, because what happens with a Lilith is that the Lilith is inside, right? And this is not necessarily blood that your body wants to keep. I'm not saying it's dirty, but it's blood that your body is letting out. So now with a Lilith, it takes up this blood. It absorbs the blood. So now when the Lilith is full, what do you think is happening? That means it's just blood that is just there, that is just sitting idle. And sitting idle blood of all things, right, is unhealthy. And that is why sometimes you get shocks. And then you end up with infections. That's why sometimes it's like being electrocuted. If you have like a tampon in for a long time, that's how you get like little shocks that go through your body, because now your body is trying to fight bacteria, right? So after every 4 hours, you take out the tampon or the Lilith and you put a new one and you start over. And the same with the pad. And I know that sometimes the pad is not full and all of that, but what you can do is smell it. If it's not full, just smell it. But then also ask yourself if you would like to put that wet, cold thing there at a very warm area. So when you feel that it is enough and it has the likelihood, because you can see it, right? If it has the likelihood of messing on you, change it. And then also, girls, I feel like you guys are clogging up our toilets. You guys are giving plumbers employment, and plumbers are not cheap. And you know how embarrassing it is for us as parents to be standing there while the person is unclogging the drain and the only thing that they are finding there is pads. Agadona, do not under any circumstances flush your pads. Don't flush your pads. The things you can flush is tampons. You can flush tampons, but don't flush pads, because it clogs up the toilet, okay? Just put it in a bag and throw it in the big dustbin. Or if you are in the rural somewhere, you go and dig a hole. Shashombizombizingane. You go and dig a hole and you bury it there. It will decompose. You know, it will decompose, except now for the plastic part, but it will decompose. It will just go back into the soil like where you came from. You came from the soil, it will go back. But take care of that. Personal hygiene is everything. Nankara, don't be smelling in public, okay? Don't be smelling because you are unhygienic with yourself. Be smelling because of circumstances. Be smelling because of the situation. But it must not be intentional at all. Don't smell intentionally. Or don't smell out of negligence, okay? Try. And if you are going to be using e-tuta, right? I know that this is a conversation that you might not, you, the person that has, might not believe that it's a conversation that we're actually having, because you assume that everybody is as privileged as you are. That is why there are so many organizations that are funding things like pads for the girl child, because there are really some people that do not have. And it's okay, because you are not going to stay not having forever. It's just a time. It's just a season, okay? So if you are a young girl child out there and this period thing started and your mother sold you nande e tutairi yari, what you can do, my dear girlie, is ask her to make you more. At least have 5. Mara unimawembo no otokoshone. unimaweto ukosho de toyaneke. Toyanek, especially at night, then if by the time you get up in the morning, they should be dry. Okay? So, ngere, ngere torongisa ituta, o tokosho, 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 nkadona wanj, tokosho, 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 unimawena ukare waera, you can be poor, just not dirty. Yeah. You can be poor, you can wear old things, just don't be dirty. That's it. Because dirt, you have a choice. With dirt, you have a choice. On gaga, you have a choice. With material and clothes and stuff like that, you don't have a choice because you don't work, you don't have money, nobody has money. It's okay. You can wear your old uniform. You can wear your old clothes. Just make sure that your clothes are clean. You will not die. You will not die. You look back at it one day and say, kucha, once upon a time, I was listening to radio and it was a day before my first period. And there was this lady, her name is the matriarch. She was talking about periods. I didn't think that it was a conversation that involved me. Up until tomorrow morning, I had to do everything that she basically said. You never know where life pushes you. And you never know what is ahead. Right? So, gere otorongithu tuta if you are using cloth, right? Because it's not everybody that has money for pads every month. I know you might be thinking that it's just $8. It's $8 that somebody doesn't have. And even if they could, they need transport to get to this place where they sell $8 pads, right? So it's just a mission on its own. So there are some girls that are using ituta. Ituta is like material that is sewn together like a pad, right? So I think that if you are a mom out there and okana kota toka ningire ituta, right? Ningane ituta ya cha ungo di uju yari taumangwa opoka oke makakareka kolera. Koka pent, koka nzoromburuku. Yeah, so you can just the same way as wings, then you, because oituta is just like a cloth that is long, that covers the rear and the front, right? But most of them are a little bit big and they're a little bit wet because they have to soak up so much, right? So, I would suggest like two strings on the sides just to hold it together so that when she moves, it doesn't fall out. Because at the end of the day, a 12-year-old is still a baby. A 12-year-old wants to play with the others. A 12-year-old will forget that she's going through this bodily, what looks like a body crisis. She'll forget. And we don't want it falling out and for her to never want to go back to school again. So we should make sure that we secure it onto her panties, okay? And yeah, so that's what happens with menstruation. I hope you guys are well cleared on this one. If you guys have any questions, the number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio if you guys have a question or two. And then we move on to number 6, which is acne. Hormonal fluctuation can lead to increased oil production and acne. So acne is basically ipuru no mbura because it's the hormones that are fluctuating. Fluctuating are going up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. It's like your hormones within your body are just jumping. It's like a jumping castle there by your hormones. So they fluctuate between good, bad, in the middle. They fluctuate. So sometimes it causes them to produce more oil than you're supposed to have. And then that's why you have like an outbreak on your face. That's why you have like oily skin all of a sudden. That's why you have pimples all of a sudden. And acne doesn't just stop with the face. Sometimes you also get body acne. And there are those that are well over puberty, but still have body acne. With body acne, ladies and gentlemen, part of the cures of body acne is body scrubs. right? Body scrubs are important because they exfoliate your skin and they also open up your pores. And this now causes your body to breathe, because most of our problems are just most of our body problems are just because we are dirty. Like, in all honesty, your face is sometimes breaking out just because you touch it a lot. And because your hands are always dirty. So you touching your face that is very sensitive with dirty hands. Yeah, that is a problem. And then the next one is emotional changes. Girls may experience mood swings, increased sensitivity, and changes in their emotional regularities. So what are mood swings? Mood swings are the swings of the mood. So I can be in a good mood now, and then I can just flip it up and I'm in a bad mood. And then it's just like Valfa's Bay or Swakopmund's weather. Valfa's Bay ngone. Valfa's Bay's weather. It's so unpredictable. That is how a girl that's going through puberty tends to react or to be. She's more aggressive. She's more easy to make cry. She's too sensitive. She's too what. And it's just a matter of understanding that this is just something that you are going through. It's not necessarily going to be like that forever. And these are just emotional changes. So sometimes it's a matter of asking the people to bear with you. But I think that there are people that have been labeled bad from going through the puberty phase, that they just stuck with a bad attitude even when they no longer had it, right? They just stuck with the bad attitude and they just stuck with it because puberty is also a long time, né? It's not like a chop fast thing. It's more like, hey, we're going through the motions together, Vel. We're going through the motions together for a while. And then imagine going through mood swings for like a year or two. Like, that's a very long time. So later on, people start to think and associate that behavior to who you are. And you may not be that. And then you just have only that one friend that actually sees you in your true colors, but you guys are going through mood swings together. So it's okay. And then there are other physical changes, like arms and legs become hairier, and girls may notice an increase in body sweat. So I'm one of those chicks that sweat like a gallon. Like, I sweat, but I like ekumbatha also. You know, so, but then also, you used to be a person that doesn't sweat much, and then all of a sudden you sweat a lot. When you're nervous, you are sweating. When you're happy, you are sweating. When you're walking, you are sweating. When you're sitting down, you are sweating. Sweat. It's all part of what you are going through. It is all part and parcel of it. All right. So, timing and duration. Puberty typically starts between 8 and 13 years old, with the average age being around 10. So this is basically when you start. So 8, we don't know. 8, maybe it's just body changes, you know, like the knuckles that we are seeing over there, the development that we are seeing over there. It could be that. But the real puberty is like from the age of 10 and going up to 13. Like, that's when you start now with puberty. And it usually lasts for about 4 years. So when somebody is studying for their degree, you are going through puberty and that's your degree. When you make it out of puberty, my friend, you would have acquired your degree in puberty, okay?
Ulio mnangeshefa nwahara kushivifa oma akuro yo kupitira mohorike radio station yo Eagle FM. Enyamukuro olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kono raheta tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwamberewa kono raheta tu natu, mbali o heta tu vatatu, ne no la no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mwane oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Good evening. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about puberty. We're talking about what happens, the period conversation. We're talking about what happens to your body. So we've spoken about periods, guys. It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be, you know? Okay. So, right now we're talking about time and duration, and usually, we start with our puberty at the age of 8, where we can now notice, kucha, there are 2 lumps, there's 1 lump. Sometimes there's even 1 lump, guys. You know, just one lump, and then the other side is just bare, there's just nothing. It's the weirdest thing, right? And then sometimes there are 2, like an even person. And then, but in full swing, puberty starts at 10, roughly. This is now in girls, right? And goes for 13, or you can start at 13. And puberty usually lasts for about 4 years, which is like a degree. And puberty can be influenced by various reasons, right? Including genetics. So you might get your puberty, or your puberty might start according to your genetics, right? So if for example, your mom started puberty at 12, the likelihood that you're also going to go through 12 is also going to be there because of genetics, right? And then nutrition, what you eat, what you drink also determines whether or not your body is going to blossom and bloom quicker or slower or whatever than others. And then also your weight. So you might find that this is an eight-year-old, right? And she weighs something like maybe 87 kg, right? She's heavy, like 87 is a lot, you know, and she weighs 87 kg at the age of 8. The likelihood that everything is also going to start happening to her is also a bit high. Or if you are maybe, for example, slender and petite and small framed, right? Then the likelihood of your puberty process starting a bit later and developing a bit later might be in your cards, okay? And then we find individual variation. The timing and duration of puberty can vary greatly amongst individuals. Some girls may start puberty earlier or later than others, and the changes may progress at different rates. I told you. When to seek advice. If a girl has not shown signs of breast development by age 13, it's important to consult with a health practitioner to rule out any underlying issues.
parents or caregivers should seek advice if they have concerns about their daughter's puberty or its progress. Okay. So sometimes you might be calling yourself a late bloomer, but sometimes it's not really late blooming. Sometimes there's something else that's wrong, right? And not unless a doctor can really also just rule this out, then maybe you might even have a problem, underlying problem under there. And that's basically it. So that's what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. And I think we have covered everything. So maybe, just maybe, you guys can call in. The number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio. And okay.
My definition of a manifesto is a code for life. And within that code, there are a series of principles that we use on a regular basis. It is my personal belief that all of us have a manifesto, and within the manifesto, there are a series of principles that go along with your personal manifesto. The challenge is that oftentimes, this manifesto and these series of principles are hidden in a layer much into our subconscious or into our unconscious. So what we have to do on a regular basis is go through a process of reflection so that we can bring these principles from the unconscious, from the subconscious, into our awareness. Now, you might be thinking, why exactly is that important? Why do I need to do that? Well, what I'm hoping to do with the next few minutes is guide you through my personal manifesto as a scientist and as a researcher to show you how I've used this guiding principle of aspiring for novelty even in the face of routine to solve fairly complex problems in the laboratory. And this problem that I'm going to share with you occurred very early on in my academic career. So this is me as a young, budding PhD student thinking I'm going to conquer the world, and I come to a stop. And using this manifesto, and in particular using one important principle of that manifesto, I was able to solve a really difficult problem that on surface seemed as if it didn't have a solution. So my PhD looked at the central question of what factors influence time to sexual maturity in a developing female. And this is within the realm of behavioral neuroendocrinology. I know that sounds like a mouthful, but essentially what I was doing was looking at how hormonal factors influence the body as well as behavior. So one good place to start investigating this really exciting and dynamic question is within the context of the laboratory mouse. And this is where I started my work. Now, I use the picture of a laboratory mouse because in science, we owe a lot to the data that we've been able to collect from the laboratory mouse, and partly because the laboratory mouse shares a lot of physiological principles that occur in humans. So if I'm trying to look at what factors influence time of sexual maturity in a developing female, well, a great place to get started is within the context of a developing female mouse. Now, if there are a lot of similarities in the physiological system of a developing female human in comparison to a developing female mouse, then the first place to get started is to look at the changes that occur in their hormones. So, around the time of sexual maturity, there are two sex steroids that start to increase in the developing female, and they also start to increase, not only in a developing female mouse, but also in a developing female human. So how exactly does one go about measuring these hormones in a mouse model? Well, being housed in the Department of Psychology, Neuroscience, and Behavior, one of the things that I often thought about was the amount of stress that we might be giving to our experimental subjects. So I thought, is there some way to be able to capture the changes that occur in these hormones without actually drawing blood? Without actually handling these animals aggressively and sticking needles into them. Now, luckily, there's a really easy way to do that. All you have to do is measure the output of these hormones in urine. The other thing that I started thinking about was the social environment of these animals. And the social environment of these animals is really important because when you have a developing female that is housed next to a novel, in other words, a new adult male that she's never encountered before, then her time to sexual maturity decreases. So in comparison to a female that might be living with her brother or brothers or her father, the female that is exposed to an adult male reaches sexual maturity sooner. So that's great. So here I am, keeping in mind all these wonderful things I know about the social environment of the animal. I'm going to measure these hormones that start to increase around the time of puberty in this female that is exposed to a variety of different conditions. And so I used a rather simple apparatus. So here is a cage in which you have a female here in the white coat, and she is housed across a male that she has never encountered before. He's even of a different strain than her, and so he is of a different coloration of fur. And so the expectation is all I have to do is measure her urinary output of estradiol and progesterone, and voila, I should see some sort of a dramatic difference in comparison to females that are housed next to their fathers or next to their brothers. The way that we did that was there is a wire grid mesh at the bottom of this cage. All the female really has to do is urinate through that, and we have this very fancy scientific apparatus, also known as a baking sheet, and all you have to do is you collect urine, and there is no kind of stress that is involved. So here I am, and I think I have a really good, sound experimental paradigm to be able to capture these dramatic differences. And you might think that you know where the story is going, and it's really going there, which is when I actually analyzed the urinary output of estradiol, what exactly did I see? Now, I'm only going to talk about estradiol because the story for progesterone was really similar. This is what I like to call the zigzag data set. What I was trying to capture was a marked difference between females that were exposed to these adult males, and I thought that there would be an increase in the amount of estradiol that they were excreting in their urine. And instead, I got this. So all these different conditions are very difficult to tell apart. And you might say, well, no, I sure eventually you see an increase in estradiol over a period of time. And I say, yes, everyone reached puberty. Wonderful. But that's not exactly what I was trying to capture. So I went around and I said, I'm still motivated and I'm going to speak to my colleagues, I'm going to speak to my mentors, and what advice did I get? Well, they said, this is the great thing about research. So you take that question and you think about it in new ways. And I thought, how exactly do I do that? Well, you just research the problem over and over again until you come up with a solution. So here's where my manifesto kicked in. In terms of thinking about searching for novelty in the face of everyday routine, I walked back into the laboratory, and I really stood still. And I'm trying to reenact exactly what I did when I got my zigzaggy data pattern. And I looked around, and I looked at the cages, I looked at the animals, I looked at the water bottles, and I looked at their food. And I actually have to bend down a little bit if I really want to be truthful, because it was a really large bag of food. And I looked at the food and I looked at the ingredients on that bag of food. And one of the things that I noticed as I was trying to play around with this bag of food, apart from realizing that it was really heavy, was that soy was the primary protein ingredient. Now, soy is absolutely wonderful. It's used in lots and lots of laboratory diets. It's used across zoos in all parts of the world. There have been articles written about soy. So, for instance, Satchel in 2006 said, the soy is this humble entity. It is a vegetable protein of the highest quality. It has very little cholesterol. It is high on its unsaturated fats, it's a good source of fiber, it has complex carbohydrates, and it's free of lactose, which is probably why it's used as a major source of protein. Okay, wonderful. So I started thinking a little bit further as I'm bending down. This is all happening within a matter of minutes. So I'm like, okay. The other thing that I know about soy is that it contains phytoestrogens. And they're called phytoestrogens because they come from a plant source and they have chemicals which have the molecular structure that is fairly similar to estrogens that we naturally produce in the body. So you don't have to have an advanced background in molecular chemistry to recognize that this phytoestrogen, genestein, is very similar in molecular structure to this chemical structure of estradiol. So I started thinking a little bit further. I'm still bending down, by the way, because I'm thinking, I really got to come up with a solution by the time I get up. And so I thought, well, what if the urinary analysis that I was doing in the laboratory was picking up not only estradiol in the urine, but also a phytoestrogen in urine, and basically washing out any results that I wanted to see. The other thing that I knew about, and here I'm taking information from a human model and extracting it to an animal model, is that very early on in development, so in utero, the developing fetus is exposed to the phytoestrogens that the mother is intaking. So I thought, if I need to produce some sort of a change, it has to occur very early in development. And it has to occur perhaps even prior to conception. And that's exactly what I did. So I phoned around. Well, eventually I got up. Then I went to my phone. And I phoned around and I tried to find out if there were laboratory diets that contained protein were equally nutritionally valuable than the diet in comparison to the diet that we were using for our laboratory mouse in our lab, and whether I could design an experiment that actually compared the use of a soy-based diet to a soy-free diet. And ultimately, what I wanted to do was I wanted to come up with differences, right? In other words, if you have a female that's exposed to this novel adult male, we know that she reaches sexual maturity. Why can't I capture that in my urine analysis? The other thing that I started to think about was that when we talk about the time of puberty, when we talk about sexual maturity in general, oftentimes people will describe it, it's a state of turmoil. My teenager is going through a tumultuous time. It's called sexual maturity, or maybe it's called puberty. And so all these changes start to occur. And I thought, maybe instead of trying to measure absolute values of estradiol, what I really need to look at are the fluctuations that occur in estradiol. And that's exactly what I did. So here is data that was published some time ago in 2008. And what you'll see on the y-axis is not the absolute level of estradiol. It's the variation that exists in estradiol around the time of sexual maturity. So in my soy-based diet, it's very difficult to figure out, much like the way that I had shown you before, which female is exposed to a male versus which female is kept in isolation, for instance. When you change the diet, in other words, when you give these individuals a soy-free diet, which is nutritionally equivalent, what you end up seeing are higher bars, higher amount of change that occurs in the case of the females that are exposed to males versus females that are kept in isolation. So this data was really valuable because what it started to show to other scientists who were studying the onset of sexual maturity in a mouse model was that you need to think about the changes that occur in hormone levels and not just the absolute amount. And you also need to think about what kind of diet you're feeding these animals because your results could be washed out simply because of a simple thing like the diet that you are using. So I go back to my original manifesto, and I call this the Scientist Manifesto, and one of the principles that is included in this is to aspire for novelty even in the face of routine. Now, you might be thinking, okay, that's really good. Great, you solved a complex problem in the laboratory. How exactly does that apply to me? And to that, I respond, you have actually experienced this manifesto for yourself probably a long, long time ago. I won't give it a number because some people are a little bit younger, some people are a little bit older in the audience, But when you were young, how many people participated in something called play? Just by a show of hands. How many people did that? Okay, so pretty much everyone said, yes, I know what play is, and I did that once upon a time. How many of you had that one play activity that you probably did over and over and over again, maybe in your summer vacation? Every day? Okay, majority of people. So what you were doing there is you had a routine, but you were aspiring for novelty within that routine. And one of the earlier speakers talked about the importance of play. And I think somewhere along the lines, we forget to do that. And my definition of what playing is exactly aspiring for novelty in the face of routine. And when I did that in the laboratory, I, as a scientist, was able to solve a complex problem that on surface seemed unsolvable. So guys, just play more. Thank you.
Good evening, my beloveds. Just pray. Okay, just play more, then don't get me, you would not let me rest today. Ooh, ha, yes, ladies and gentlemen. So, good evening to you. We at Eagle FM do not take any rights of the clips that we are playing. We are using them for educational purposes only. Please take note.
I have this completely simple but apparently radical idea about puberty. It's not so different for boys and for girls. I'm a pediatrician, so I get that the parts are different, and how those parts are going to change, that's different, and when and what they will do with those parts once they have transformed, I get all that. But how parents parent their girls versus their boys is different, and it shouldn't be. And in fact, how the whole world talks to boys versus girls is different, and it shouldn't be, because the world talks to girls. Parents, grandparents, health experts, educators, content creators, writers, bloggers, vloggers, our endless communication with our girls is a boon, but our lack of communication with our boys is a fail. And I think we have to change that, because the stakes have never been higher. We pretty much all accept at this point that the end of puberty is a ways away from full adulthood. And yet teenagers, they are accountable for their actions. Not only that, but their actions, they're often being recorded and then shared either in the moment or saved for some future sharing opportunity. So while adolescence used to be a time to make mistakes, in reality, now teenagers can only make certain types of mistakes. Now, I get why we talk to girls when they're in puberty. And that's because from the very beginning, from that very first curve that appears, girls tend to wear their moods on the outside, and they get chatty. So in the decades since I was a tween, which, by the way, wasn't even a word when I was one, there has been a profound shift to take advantage of that chattiness. Girls talked, and so the world gave them a microphone, and they used it. They started to share how they felt about their body, about their friends, and then they moved to more profound topics. They started to talk about self-esteem and safety and consent. Girls talk, not always nicely, not always to the adults in their lives, and not always in the classroom, but girls talk. And you see, it's not that girls don't have issues with their femaleness, because they do, but they have the language to manage those issues. They have the practice using that language because they have lots of talking practice. Now, boys, they go through puberty a very different way. Boys get quiet. Some of them, it's like they're silent, basically monosyllabic. Yeah. No. Okay. Or just the grunt. You know the grunt? Some boys talk to the adults in their lives or to their friends, but it's usually less than before. by the end of middle school, when the zits are popping and taking off a pair of shoes can completely clear a room, most boys have retreated. And we all, parents and grandparents and health experts and educators and content creators and writers and bloggers and vloggers, we all honor it and allow it, and we become silent in return. We treat adolescent boy quiet like it is some sort of hormonal rite of passage not to be messed with. And I will tell you, I have looked through all the data, but I cannot find a decent study that shows me why boys tend to go quiet during this period of their life. So maybe it's hormones, maybe it's not. I don't know. But what I do know is that dads tend to defend it. They say, well, I got quiet and I turned out fine, so it's no big deal. I even turned out multisyllabic. No one is giving our boys a microphone. My idea is that we actively leave our boys out of the very same conversations that we pull our girls into. And all the while, puberty is not so different for boys and for girls. Yes, the parts are different. But you know what's not different? The experience of transformation. You know what else isn't different? The expectations on the other end when you emerge closer to adulthood, those are the same for both genders, and they are much better managed with communication skills. I come at this topic from a unique perspective because I make a living communicating with kids in puberty. So I am a pediatrician, but I left my practice 10 years ago to become a writer, and I literally fell into writing the most widely read girl body book in the country, a book called The Care and Keeping of You. I did not write the original book. That book came out 20 years ago. I wish I had, because it became a cult classic within an instant. But several years ago, I joined with American Girl, who is the publisher of that book, and yes, the manufacturer of those dolls. And we partnered. I updated the original Care and Keeping, and then I wrote a series of other books in the same title sequence. And today, 6 million girls own a Care and Keeping book. These books are passed down through family members and through friend groups. They are basic body positive puberty primers designed to start conversations, and their reach is bananas. So when I got to American Girl, first day I got there, I pitched a boy book, and they laughed at me. And they didn't even laugh at me because they're a girl company that only makes things for girls. They laughed at me because they said, no boy would ever want to read a book about his body. I disagreed. So I took my idea to every publisher I knew, big and small, and they all said the same thing. But the thing is, every boy I had ever taken care of in the office, every boy I knew would want to read that book. Frankly, the only boy who would not want to read that book was my son, because it's not the book you want to read when it's written by your mother. I pitched for 5 years. And I got no 100 different ways. And then one day, out of the blue, I get a call from American Girl, and they said, we're reconsidering because, hey, boys go through puberty too. And I wrote that book so fast, I was not giving anyone a chance to think twice. In 2017, we launched Guy Stuff, the body book for boys. 80% of the content in the boy book and the girl book is identical. The words are a little different, the tone, the pictures, but the content is the same. And that's because the basic lessons of puberty, whether it's the virtue of sleep or why you need to use soap in the shower, these lessons have nothing to do with gender. All they have to do with is good basic information and communication. I think the real reason I prevailed, actually, was that the simple fact that our kids today are entering puberty 1 to 2 years earlier than we did. And this information first came to light in 1997 when a very large study of girls was released, the data was released, showing that girls, in fact, were going into puberty much younger than their mothers ever did. did. So over the past two decades, we've seen multiple studies looking at girl populations, and they've all confirmed what the original 1997 study showed, which is why we now accept it as completely normal to see signs of puberty beginning as young as 8 in Caucasian and Hispanic girls, and as young as 7 in Black girls. And in fact, this is why American Girl wrote the original Care and Keeping book. They saw this article in the New York Times and said, we have to address our core constituency of little girls who are starting to look like women. 15 years later, data started to emerge about boys, and it turns out that they too were facing a downward shift in the entry to puberty. But the thing is, when boys enter puberty, they tend to do it quietly. They don't have budding breasts and widening hips for all the world to see. Their changes, for the first couple of years at least, happen under the underpants. And the thing is that parents will tell you that if you have a son in the very beginning of puberty living in your house, this is the very same age when boys become incredibly private. So parents always say to me, how am I supposed to know what's happening under their underpants because of the privacy thing? It's very amazing to me to see the difference in the reaction to these two sets of articles, but I understand it now. In 1997, we wanted to talk about girls and their body changes because we could all see it. But 15 years later, in 2012, when the data showed that the average age for a boy to enter puberty was 10 if he was Caucasian or Hispanic and 9 if he was Black, I think no one believed it, because we didn't see it. We don't talk to our boys as they enter puberty because we don't recognize that they are in it. They just smell a little bit more, and they think a little bit less, and they slowly, slowly start.
You see, I have been telling you people that boys are also going through puberty, but apparently they are not people. They're not going through nothing. Okay.
To shut their doors and their mouths. We don't talk to them because, according to every man I have ever asked, no one talked to me and I came out okay. It's nothing to worry about, they say. We don't talk to them because we don't think they're ready for it. We know their brains are not mature. They are not going to be able to think like adults and make smart, consequential, long-term decisions consistently for another 1 to 2 decades. But they don't have that long. We have to have those conversations sooner. To parents who do talk to their boys, often they cover any given subject once or twice, which is great. But this stuff is like feeding a new food to a baby. You need to give it 10 times before they stop spitting it out. We can do better, and we have to, because the future of our kids, our boys and our girls, depends not just on navigating school and sports and future job prospects, but also friendships and safety, romance and consent, bullying and violence, standing by and standing up. And if we don't have those conversations with our kids, we're not modeling for them what they need to do to manage those issues, nor are we filling the toolkit that they need for life. So it is having 1,000 conversations in 1,000 different ways that help prepare our kids for life's myriad of scenarios. I am telling you, as a pediatrician, as an expert in puberty, and as a mom of a teenage daughter and a teenage son, we need to talk to our boys the way we talk to our girls, which means constantly. We need to hand them a microphone so that they can find their voice, and they can then find a way to talk back to us and to their friends and the world. We would not tolerate our girls shutting the door and going silent, because they need to know. Well, our boys need to know. So if you have a son who is retreating and starting to shut the door, which is completely normal, just stick your foot in and start talking. Thank you.
Just stick your foot in and start talking. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are doing the most with this puberty thing. Guys, you will not go through puberty alone, okay?
Hey. My definition of a manifesto is...
All right. So, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you have just joined us, we're having the period talk. We're having the puberty talk. We're having the TED talk about your body. We're having the TED talk about you. We're having the TED talk, guys. We're starting small and we're trying. Ladies and gentlemen, there's also this thing that happens within our puberty stage if we're having teenagers. Guys, It's the hormones. It's the, apparently, we are mean and we are what during puberty. So let's talk about that one.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for the wonderful introduction. As he said, my name is Dr. Lisa Welling. And today I want to talk to you all a little bit about the science of attraction. We know in animal work, for example, that many bird species, the females attracted to brightly colored feathers in males, presumably because it signals genetic fitness. Similarly, male chimpanzees are attracted to sexual swellings in female chimpanzees because it signals fertile status. But what about humans? What makes someone physically attractive? Now, this may sound like a simple question, but how is it we're able to take a beautiful actress like America Ferrera and turn her into Ugly Betty? Like our bodies, our behavior and our preferences have been shaped by millions of years of evolution. Albeit not the only important thing in our lives, of course, physical attractiveness is very important for romantic and sexual relationships, which of course impact the course of our lives and the evolution of our species. For most, you meet someone and you decide whether or not to pursue a relationship based on a mutual attraction. So a lot of my research is interested in what causes that initial attraction and why. Despite the widely held belief that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, there's actually a great deal of evidence that there is cross-cultural agreement on what traits are considered attractive. Healthy-looking people are considered more attractive-looking than relatively unhealthy-looking people. People with symmetrical features are considered more physically attractive than people with relatively asymmetrical features. Here, in these two examples, the more attractive individual is the one on the left. And we see predictable patterns in what is known as sexually dimorphic features. Now, sexual dimorphism is a fancy way of referring to physical differences between the sexes, like feminine traits in women and masculine traits in men. Within either sex, an individual can be more or less sex typical. But there is evidence to suggest that feminine women and masculine men possess other characteristics desirable in a potential mate. For instance, these individuals actually report having fewer health problems and greater longevity than relatively sex atypical counterparts. So if you reproduce with these individuals, these genes for fighting infection could be directly beneficial to your offspring who receive these genes for genetic immunocompetence and indirectly beneficial to you because your offspring are thus more likely to survive into adulthood, reproduce themselves, and thus spread your genetic line. Not only are sex hormones responsible for the development of these secondary sexual characteristics at puberty, there's evidence to suggest that these hormones continue to influence who we find attractive later on in life. Now, given the evidence I just presented to you, you may be asking yourself, well, then why is it we don't always go for hyper-feminine and hyper-masculine men if they're so good, these genetic fitness benefits that we could actually obtain? Well, for starters, they may not be interested in you. Sorry to break it to you. Our ability to attract and retain a potential mate also depends on what scientists lovingly refer to as our own market value. So basically, it also depends on what you can bring to the table. There's also evidence that masculine men in particular do possess some traits, on average, that are not desirable in a potential partner. So masculine men are average, on average are more dishonest, have more one-night stands, and lower interest in children. So attraction to these characteristics depends largely on how people resolve these cost-benefit trade-offs. One way in which it seems they resolve this is through their hormone levels. Hormones are chemical messengers that are released into the blood or tissue fluid system that travel to target cells some distance from the source. Behavioral endocrinology is a study of the relationship between hormones and behavior. Now, these relationships can be bidirectional, which means that hormones can influence behavior, and behavior can also influence hormones. Three main classes of sex steroid hormones have received the most attention when it comes to human attractiveness research. Progestins, the key hormone being progesterone, are mainly involved in pregnancy. Estrogens, the key hormone being estradiol, are largely responsible for the development of female secondary sexual characteristics. And androgens, the key hormone being testosterone, are largely responsible for the development of male secondary sexual characteristics. Regardless of their perceived primary function, all three of these classes of hormones are present in both men and women. For instance, in your average 28-day woman's menstrual cycle, menstruation begins on day one of what is called the follicular phase. Menstruation continues for about 5 days, and then the follicular phase continues until ovulation, which is when an egg is released, and conception can occur. After ovulation, we have what's known as the luteal phase, which is when a fertilized embryo can implant into the uterine lining and pregnancy can occur. If there is no pregnancy, hormone levels drop and the cycle starts over. As you can see, estrogen, testosterone, and progesterone all vary predictably across a woman's menstrual cycle, and different points of a menstrual cycle have markedly different hormonal profiles. So for instance, in the late follicular phase, which is when sex can result in conception, you can see that estrogen is relatively high, testosterone is relatively high, but progesterone is very low. Meanwhile, in the middle of the luteal phase, when conception isn't going to happen, you have reasonably high estrogen, but still lower, low testosterone, and very high progesterone levels. Now, previous researchers have found that women's reported attraction to masculine characteristics in men are actually higher when a woman is near ovulation. So in other words, women increase their attraction to these signs to genetic fitness when they're most likely to conceive. It seems likely that hormones are driving these effects, but which hormones? And how do we actually measure differences in phase preferences? We spend a lot of time looking at faces, and they are crucial for person perception. They convey relevant information like age, sex, and emotion. And there's even evidence to suggest that the face is the most important element in determining someone's overall physical attractiveness. Now, you may ask yourself, why does that matter? Well, although both men and women report that physical attractiveness is not an important determinant when it comes to choosing who to date, evidence suggests they're by and large kidding themselves. For example, the single biggest predictor of satisfaction with a blind date is perceived physical attractiveness of the other person. On top of that, people prefer to associate with, date, reproduce with, and they even prefer to employ and vote for physically attractive people. There's evidence that physical attractiveness even influences fundamental aspects of human care. Mothers report bonding more closely with cuter infants. Children who are cute are less likely to be punished when they misbehave. I've got two adorable nephews that can attest to that. And one study even found that nurses provide a higher quality of care to cuter premature born newborns versus relatively less cute premature newborns. But before you go losing all faith in humanity because we are the shallowest race in existence, let me just stress that these are not necessarily conscious choices, that people aren't purposely choosing to invest necessarily in attractive people. But there is something about physical attractiveness that grabs and holds our attention. And all this research suggests that studying the determinants of physical attractiveness can really provide important insights into human social interactions. So to actually measure these differences in preferences, we like to use faces since they're so important in physical attractiveness perceptions, and we use sophisticated computer graphics software. This software can objectively and mathematically measure differences in face shape between types of faces and then apply those differences to other faces. We can make them older, younger, change their ethnicity or sex, or change other aspects of face shape like sex typicality. So first we start by making average or prototype faces. And we do this by mapping out identical points on series of faces. And then our software can average a chunk of faces together. So on the left we have a female prototype face. And on the right we have a male prototype face. Each of these faces are actually made up of 60 separate identities. Then our software can measure the vector differences between the points on one prototype face and the same points on the other prototype face to reveal the vector differences or average differences between your average man and your average woman. By applying these differences to other identities, we can objectively make more or less sex-typical versions, or in other words, we can make feminized and masculinized versions of other individuals. So in the center here, you have original me. On the left, you've got feminized me. And on the right, you've got masculinized me. I've never looked so good. Now, the important thing to take from this is that although two-dimensional sex typicality has changed, other aspects of face shape have remained the same. So background is identical, skin texture remains unchanged, and anyone who knows me could tell from any of these examples that that's me. So identity remains the same. Now, if we bring women into the lab and test them at different points in their menstrual cycle, we ask them to choose between a series of faces. Which of these two faces do you think is the most attractive? We find the predicted pattern that women are more attracted to masculine faces near ovulation. So women are more likely to choose the guy on the right near ovulation. Now, this time we actually measured their hormone levels to see which hormones seem to be driving this effect. Remember, around ovulation, we've got high testosterone level, high estrogen, and low progesterone. So with some fancy math, we were able to look at the independent contributions of each of those hormones. And what we found was that testosterone seemed to be driving the effect. In other words, women's preferences for masculine men are higher when their testosterone is high near ovulation than when the same women's testosterone is relatively low. So here the higher bars indicate a greater preference for masculine men. There's other evidence in favor of this hypothesis. So for example, a woman's preference for masculine men increases when her sex drive goes up. And women's sex drive has been linked quite clearly with testosterone level. Otherwise, you see similar patterns of diurnal variation in both masculinity preferences in women and testosterone level. So basically, testosterone is highest in the morning and decreases throughout the day. Women's preferences for masculine men are also higher in the morning and lower in the evening in the same women. So all of this suggests that testosterone influences women's preference for rugged, manly men. But when most people think of testosterone, they think of men. So this begs the question, does testosterone also contribute to variation in face preferences among men? Now, in men, testosterone has been linked to several different constructs. It's linked to aggression, vocational choice, mating strategy, and even reproductive success. If we run men through a very similar task of choosing between different faces, we find a similar pattern for testosterone being related to preference for sex typicality. So here the feminine face is the one on the left. Basically, we've shown this in two studies now. The one on the left was looking at natural variation in testosterone, suggests men's natural levels when it was high relative to when it was low. And the study on the right actually looked at manipulating testosterone pharmacologically. So participants came in twice. Once we gave them testosterone, a synthetic testosterone, and a second time we gave them placebo. In both of these studies, what we found was that overall, men's preferences for feminine women were higher when their testosterone levels were high, relative to when the same men's testosterone levels were low. Similarly, both men's preferences for feminine women and their testosterone decrease with age. And also, you see predictable patterns when you look at winning or losing a competitive task. When men win a competitive task, their testosterone just kind of goes through the roof. It goes up big time. But if they lose a competitive task, it just plunges through the floor. So what you see, we brought men into the lab. This has actually been shown in multiple contexts. We've shown it with, you know, actually playing a sport and all the way to flipping a coin and betting on heads or tails. You win, your testosterone goes up. Yay. If you lose, it goes down, unfortunately. Now, when we brought them into the lab, we had them play a video game task against an unseen male opponent. And unbeknownst to our participants, we actually fixed the outcome so they are randomly allocated to win or lose this video game task. And what we found was that when men won the video game task, their preference for feminine women were higher than when men lost. So this tracks the testosterone pattern. All of this goes to suggest that testosterone increases preferences for sex-typical, opposite-sex faces in both men and women. So the translation here is that hormones influence your romantic partner preferences. This is just one example of one hormone's influence on one aspect of human behavior. But there are many others. Some of them are relatively subtle, like the examples I discussed today. Others are more obvious, but they're all nonetheless fascinating. Just imagine, you're out in the town with friends and someone catches your eye at the bar. Maybe things go well, so you decide to start dating. Maybe things go really well, and so you get married. And then maybe you decide to start a family of your own. This story, or some variation of the story, is actually very common. You can get your happily ever after, or at least some version of an ever after, and it could all start with the right hormonal profile. Or maybe the hormones just weren't in your favor. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about puberty. We're talking about hormones. We're talking about teens. We're talking about the shebang. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are bringing in the big guns, right? The big guns are the ones that are going to tell us how to do it because these kids are scary. But how about the communication barrier between parents and children? How do we tackle that one? Let's dive into that.
I have two kids. When they were very small, their father and I, our goal was to just keep them alive every single day. Lucy, do not eat that Tide Pod that you found under the sink. Owen, when we go hiking, you need to stay on the trail, not go off and choose your own adventure. And in case you're wondering, if you're ever at Kohl's and you hear someone call a code yellow over the walkie-talkie system, it may be that one of your children has separated from you, disappeared through the clothes racks, and is now in the front of the store making trains out of the shopping carts by the entrance. Our goal was to keep them happy, healthy, safe, and alive every single day. Now that they're older, things look a little bit different. No longer can I keep them by my side every day and protect them. Now conversations go a little bit like this. Hey, Mom, can I take the car to Nashville to go see a concert with my friends? And I find myself channeling my inner Frances McDormand, who in the Cameron Crowe film, Almost Famous, when she drops off her sweet little William at his first Black Sabbath concert, rolls down the window and shouts out, "Don't take drugs!" as she has to leave him behind. You see, we no longer can protect them every single day. So we have to start to let them go. But how do we do that? How do we as parents start to give them that independence that they need? And why is it so important to their development? The German-American psychologist Erik Erikson believed that as people develop, they go through many stages of development. During adolescence, children are in a stage known as identity versus role confusion. It begins about the age of 12 and ends about the age of 18. During this time, teenagers are trying to identify who they are as people and trying to establish their independence. This constant struggle of wanting to become independent, yet the parents want to keep them protected, and this constant wanting to establish who they are as individual people and establish this identity creates many of the conflicts that parents see in their home with their teenagers. So what do parents do? How do you protect them, yet let them be independent? And how do you let them start to become and develop their own identity? So maybe you've had a conversation like this. Your child, bright, smart, well put together kid, suddenly is failing their classes. So you go to smart, bright, capable child and say, okay, child, what is going on? And they say to you, well, a number of things could be going on. But normally, they start blaming things. Well, the teacher this, and the classwork this, and things are just too hard. And you think to yourself, well, there's got to be a reason because, you know, they're on their Xbox all the time after school, and they're spending a lot of time with their girlfriend. And they've assured you that everything is just fine. But usually it's universal, well, I don't know. Maybe you've heard that one. The point is that when you talk to them, whatever comes out of them when you start questioning them, think about it, what it was like when you were 15, 16, 17 years old, and all of what you felt when you were in adolescence, the struggles you had, the difficulties of finding yourself and what that meant, how would you have wanted the adults in your life to respond to you? It may seem like a great time to start with, well, when I was your age, or, hey, we never had this problem with your older sister. But in that moment, when that child is talking to you, the most important thing you can do is listen to what they have to say. You see, when you engage in that active listening with them, it encourages them to speak more and tell you more about what's going on with them. As they talk to you, there are two things that you need to establish, something you need to say and a question that you need to ask. The statement that needs to be made is, the statement you need to say is, I'm here for you. And the question is, what can I do to help? As you are growing with your adolescent, you are no longer going to be a leadership of your child, but create a partnership with your child. When you say to them, I'm here for you, that starts to create that partnership with your child. And when you say to them, what can I do to help? It causes them to pause and think, well, what do I need? That starts to create that independence, and then it starts to build that collaboration with your child. There also is a lot of educating that goes into this time of life. Again, if you think back to when they were really small, you taught them many, many things. If you think back to, you teach them how to feed themselves, dress themselves, ride a bike. You teach them how to be safe, like cross the street. When they're older, they still need a lot of teaching, even though they fight you on it. they still need to be taught how to manage their time when they're learning. They need to be taught how to manage their money when they get a new job. They need to be taught how to drive. And most importantly, how to manage and care for themselves when they're getting into new and unfamiliar relationships. You see, parents never stop parenting. I myself, we are in the throes of adolescence with my own two children. What they need from me now is different than what they needed from me when I was little. My own parents are in their retirement age, and they have three adult children, and we are still going to mom and dad for advice. Not too long ago, I made my first solo adult purchase of a brand new vehicle, and I went through all the paperwork. I sat down with the car company. I picked out the vehicle I want. I did all the financing, and I felt very adult. But before I made that purchase, I called my dad to make sure I was making a smart decision. It all comes down to this. When a baby is born, there's a lot of excitement around a child. People sign up. They come over to see the baby. They come over to hold the baby. They come over to bring you a casserole. How's the baby doing? How's mom doing? How's dad doing? Is there anything I can do to help? Wouldn't it be great when you had a teenager and they started going through puberty and adolescence if they said to you, hey, Susan, can I bring you a casserole and check in on you? You know, hey, Mary, can I come over and sit with you while Tommy's out at the rock concert? Won't be home till 2 a.m. We wait till he gets home for curfew. It is important as they grow that you keep parenting and loving and caring for that child, but in a different way. Adolescence is hard. It's hard on the kids. It's hard on the parents. It's hard on society. Just ask John Hughes. He wrote many films on the matter. As Allison said in The Breakfast Club, as you grow older, your heart dies. When you're parenting an adolescent, just remember that heart piece. Use your heart. Consider their heart. And if you think about parenting a teenager as a collaboration instead of a competition, then as Russell Hammond said in Almost Famous, you truly will be a golden god. Thank you.
All right, quick poll. Raise your hand if you have a relationship in your life that's meaningful to you. Okay, I assumed, but always good to check our assumptions. I'm saying this because while I'll be focusing today on a parent-child relationship, please know that everything I'm talking about is applicable to any meaningful relationship. So with that in mind, let's jump in. So it's Sunday night. I'm in my kitchen. I just finished cooking dinner for my family, and I am on edge. I mean, I'm exhausted. I haven't been sleeping well. I'm anxious about the upcoming work week. I'm overwhelmed by all the items on my unfinished to-do list. And then my son walks into the kitchen. He looks at the table and whines, "Chicken again? Disgusting." And that's it. I snap. I look at him and I yell, "What is wrong with you? Can you be grateful for one thing in your life?" And things get worse from there. He screams, "I hate you." He runs out of the room and he slams his bedroom door. And now my self-loathing session begins as I say to myself, "What is wrong with me? I've messed up my kid forever." Well, if you're a parent, you've probably felt that pain. For me, it comes with an extra layer of shame. I mean, I'm a clinical psychologist and my specialty is helping people become better parents. And yet, this is true as well. There is no such thing as a perfect parent. Mistakes and struggles, they come with the job, but no one tells us what to do next. Do we just move on? Kind of just pretend the whole thing never happened? Or if I say something, What are the words? Well, for years, as a clinical psychologist in private practice, I saw client after client struggle with this question. And now, as the creator of the parenting content and community platform Good Inside, I see millions of parents around the globe struggle with this issue. All parents yell. No one knows what to do next. Well, I'm determined to fill this gap. After all, there's almost nothing within our interpersonal relationships that can have as much impact as repair. Whenever a parent asks me, what one parenting strategy should I focus on? I always say the same thing. Get good at repair. So what is repair? Repair is the act of going back to a moment of disconnection, taking responsibility for your behavior, and acknowledging the impact it had on another. And I want to differentiate a repair from an apology. Because when an apology often looks to shut a conversation down, hey, I'm sorry I yelled, can we move on now? A good repair opens one up. And if you think about what it means to get good at repair, there's so much baked in realism and hope and possibility. Repair assumes there's been a rupture. So to repair, you have to mess up or fall short of someone else's expectations. Which means the next time I snap at my kid or my husband or my work colleague, instead of berating myself like I did that night in the kitchen, I try to remind myself, I'm focusing on getting good at repair. Step one is rupture. Check that off. I crushed it. Step two is repair. I can do this. I'm actually right on track. So let's get back to my example. I'm in the kitchen. My son is in his room. Well, what will happen if I don't repair? That's really important to understand and helps us make a decision about what to do next. Well, here are the facts. My son is alone, overwhelmed, and in a state of distress because, let's face it, his mom just became scary mom. And now he has to figure out a way to get back to feeling safe and secure. And if I don't go help him do that through making a repair, he has to rely on one of the only coping mechanisms he has at his own disposal. Self-blame. Self-blame sounds like this. Something's wrong with me. I'm unlovable. I make bad things happen. Ronald Fairbairn may have said it best when he wrote that for kids, it is better to be a sinner in a world ruled by God than to live in a world ruled by the devil. In other words, it's actually adaptive for a child to internalize badness and fault because at least then they can hold on to the idea that their parents and the world around them is safe and good. And while self-blame works for us in childhood, we all know it works against us in adulthood. Something's wrong with me. I make bad things happen. I'm unlovable. These are the core fears of so many adults. But really, we see here, they are actually the childhood stories we wrote when we were left alone following distressing events that went unrepaired. Plus, adults with self-blame are vulnerable to depression, anxiety, deep feelings of worthlessness, none of which we want for our kids. And we can do better. And it doesn't mean we have to be perfect. When you repair, you go further than removing a child's story of self-blame. You get to add in all the elements that were missing in the first place. Safety, connection, coherence, love, goodness. It's as if you're saying to a child, I will not let this chapter of your life end in self-blame. Yes, this chapter will still contain the event of yelling, but I can ensure this chapter has a different ending and therefore a different title and theme and lesson learned. We know that memory is original events combined with every other time you've remembered that event. This is why therapy is helpful, right? When you remember painful experiences from your past within a safer and more connected relationship, the event remains, but your story of the event, it changes. And then you change. With repair, we effectively change the past. So let's write a better story. Let's learn how to repair. Step one, repair with yourself. That's right. I mean, you can't offer compassion or groundedness or understanding to someone else before you access those qualities within yourself. Self-repair means separating your identity, who you are, from your behavior, what you did. For me, it means telling myself two things are true. I'm not proud of my latest behavior, and my latest behavior doesn't define me. Even as I struggle on the outside, I remain good inside. I can then start to see that I'm a good parent, identity, who was having a hard time, behavior, and no, this doesn't let me off the hook. This is precisely what leaves me on the hook for change. Because now that I've replaced my spiral with groundedness, I can actually use my energy toward thinking about what I want to do differently the next time. Oh, and I can now use my energy to go repair with my son. Step two, repair with your child. There's no exact formula. I often think about three elements. Name what happened, take responsibility, state what you would do differently the next time. It could come together like this. Hey, I keep thinking about what happened the other night in the kitchen. I'm sorry I yelled. I'm sure that felt scary, and it wasn't your fault. I'm working on staying calm, even when I'm frustrated. A 15-second intervention can have a lifelong impact. I've replaced my child's story of self-blame with a story of self-trust and safety and connection. I mean, what a massive upgrade. And to give a little more clarity around how to repair, I want to share a few examples of what I call not repair, which are things that come more naturally to most of us, definitely me included. Hey, I'm sorry I yelled at you in the kitchen. But, you know, if you wouldn't have complained about dinner, it wouldn't have happened. Been there, okay. Or, you know, you really need to be grateful for things in your life, like a home-cooked meal. Then you won't get yelled at. Not only do these interventions fail at the goal of reconnection, they also insinuate that your child caused your reaction, which simply isn't true and isn't a model of emotion regulation we want to pass on to the next generation. So let's say we've all resisted the "it was your fault anyway, not repairs," and have instead prioritized a repair that allows us to reconnect. What might the impact be? What might that look like in adulthood? My adult child won't spiral in self-blame when they make a mistake and won't take on blame for someone else's mistake. My adult child will know how to take responsibility for their behavior because you've modeled how to take responsibility for yours. Repairing with a child today sets the stage for these critical adult relationship patterns. Plus, it gets better. Now that I've reconnected with my son, I can do something really impactful. I can teach him a skill he didn't have in the first place, which is how kids actually change their behavior. So maybe the next day I say, you know, you're not always going to like what I make for dinner. Instead of saying, that's disgusting, I wonder if you could say, not my favorite. Now I'm teaching him how to regulate his understandable disappointment and communicate effectively and respectfully with another person. That never would have happened if instead I had been blaming him for my reaction. So here's the point where you might have a lingering concern. Maybe you're thinking, you know, I have a feeling my kid's older than your kid. I think it's too late. Or, I've done a lot worse than you did in the kitchen. Maybe it's too late. Well, I mean this. If you have only one takeaway from this talk, please let this be it. It is not too late. It is never too late. How do I know? Well, imagine right after this, you get a call from one of your parents. And if neither of your parents are alive, imagine finding and opening a letter you hadn't seen till that moment. Okay, walk through this with me. Here's the call. Hey, I know this sounds out of the blue, but I've been thinking a lot about your childhood. And I think there were a lot of moments that felt really bad to you. And you were right to feel that way. Those moments weren't your fault. They were times when I was struggling, and if I could have gone back, I would have stepped aside. I would have calmed myself down and then found you to help you with whatever you were struggling with. I'm sorry. And if you're ever willing to talk to me about any of those moments, I'll listen. I won't listen to have a rebuttal. I'll listen to understand. I love you. I don't know many adults who don't have a fairly visceral reaction to that exercise. I often hear, why am I crying? Or, listen, that wouldn't change everything, but it might change some things. Well, I definitely do not special in math, but here's something I know with certainty. If you have a child, that child is younger than you are. Always true. The story of their life is shorter and even more amenable to editing. So if that imagined exercise had an impact on you, imagine the impact an actual repair will have on your child. See, I told you, it's never too late. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's never too late to repair the relationships that you have with your children. And if we are going to start talking, let's talk about the body changes. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody needs an ear. Everybody needs a moment to talk. Even the boys need a moment to talk. That's why I think for time and memoria, we have always slid the boy child aside because they don't have many problems. Even the boy child himself, he says like, no, but girls need more attention. But truth is, they are all going through the motions. We are all going through the motions. And if they're going through the motions, right? Let's be there for them. But before that, before we close the night, let's have the perspective of a young teenager, okay?
One morning, shortly after my 13th birthday, I walked out into the living room and saw my mom reading 1-2-3 Magic Teen, Communicate, Connect, and Guide Your Teen to Adulthood, by Dr. Thomas W. Fallon. My first thought was that she doesn't need to be reading this. She knows how to parent me. I'm not going to change. Yeah, I was wrong. The next week I was thinking to myself, what if I wrote a book about parenting? Wouldn't that be interesting? I bet every parent would like to know what their teen's thinking about their parenting. So when this opportunity popped up, I thought this would be a perfect topic to talk about. We'll start with technology, because technology is an area where teens and parents usually don't get along, mostly because of the difference between technology from today and when my parents were teens. In my opinion, I think a child should get a phone based off on the environment. So what I mean by that, if your child lives in Iowa, kids usually don't need a phone at 8th grade. But for kids who live in New York City, they have to walk to school and get food in the city, so it's more important to have a phone at a younger age for safety purposes. There's age, but there's also time to consider. For me, I think the time limit should be anything that the parents can handle. What I mean by that, if you are spending 12 hours on your phone and tell your kid you only have 1 hour screen time, there's a problem. Don't set time limits for your kid if you can't follow them too. I mean, come on parents, have a little fairness. A time limit should be anything that you can handle. In order to understand your teen, you need to understand what your teen thinks of you. Some teens describe their parents as certain stereotypes. These stereotypes fall into two categories, the boss and the loosey-goosey. The boss is a strict parent that you might hear saying, what I say goes, and when you make the money, then you can make the rules. The loosey-goosey lets anything slide. For example, a teen could stay up all night, but the loosey-goosey wouldn't have a problem with that. Also, a loosey-goosey could also be okay with one thing and be strict on another. For example, a teen could have a very strict bedtime, but have as much screen time as they like. The parent that I like to see is not the boss, nor the loosey-goosey, but in the middle. I call this parent the listener. The listener gives directions, but let their teen have options. The boss and the loosey-goosey aren't bad parents, but the listener takes the good out of these two and then leaves the bad. Imagine your teen wants to quit the basketball team and get a job at McDonald's. The listener would ask questions before the team would make a decision. The listener would also give directions on places to work if they didn't want them to work that place. But how can you listen to your teen if he or she is so mad? Or how can your teen listen to you if you're so mad? Let's talk about emotions. So, emotions. We all have them. But teen emotions are very special. According to Marwa Azab in her PhD article, Why Are Teens So Emotional? The part of the brain that controls the emotional system is called the limbic brain structure. The limbic system is slower to develop than our logical system. It takes some time for a teen to connect her emotional system and her logical system. Basically, when I'm feeling sad or mad, the emotions feel very intense. When I'm feeling sad or mad, it feels like a wave has just crashed into me. I'm not thinking why I'm sad or mad. It's just there. One day after tennis practice, I was thinking to myself, I don't really want to join the team. It was a lot of work, and it was every day, so I asked my mom about it in the car. She said that we're committed to the team. And all of a sudden, I started crying. I couldn't stop. That wave of emotions just hit me, and I cried all the way home. And my mom was so calm about it. That made me even more mad. I was expecting my mom to get really mad at me, but when she didn't, that got me really mad. When I got home and calmed down, I was thinking about what just happened. I just had my first mood swing, and I didn't even know it. So what I learned about parenting from my first mood swing is that when your teen's experiencing a wave of emotions, the key for parenting is to stay calm. If you stay calm, your teen's wave of emotions will pass, and they'll realize that they're being silly. But if you fight back, your teen actually has a reason to be mad. They won't think about how they just had a mood swing. They'll think about how you just yelled at them. So parents, if your teen's experiencing a mood swing, stay calm and realize it's not you, it's emotions. As a beginner teen, I'm starting to learn about emotions, understanding technology, and seeing different types of parents. I also understand since I'm the oldest, my parents are figuring this out too. And by the way, I love my parents, and this is not about how bad they are parenting. This comes from a variety of places and my realization on, wow, it's really hard to parent a teen. We all experience like what it's to be a teen. With a little bit of listening, we'll all get to the finish line. Thank you.
All right. Apparently, we're all going to get to the finish line and all our children are going to be amazing and they're going to be great people if we just follow a few steps. And one of the steps is to repair relationships. And also, I think that it is very difficult to apologize to children. But it's not difficult to apologize to children because we find it difficult. But it is difficult to apologize to children because we've never had apologies as children. So we don't know what it looks like. Ladies and gentlemen, let us look after our children. Let us see them through. Let us be that beacon of hope, that little glimmer. All right, that goes through life with them instead of against them because they're already fighting so many things. And like you heard, puberty is something like 4 years, guys. If you can sweat and cry for a degree in 4 years, then imagine the same work being done, but it is in your body and in your life. Ladies and gentlemen, let us not forget that we are all human beings and we are all having human experience. I can't picture myself as a teen anymore. I can't picture what I went through. I consider myself to be a chilled person. I consider myself to be one of those teens that were very chilled, but I did have my moments. I did have my moments, and there by mood swings, I can honestly say that I can honestly look back at the confrontations and the reprimanding and really honestly say that was a mood swing instead of being a bad parent. You're so, I hate you. And I've never told my parents that I hate them, but I did. I did say it inside my heart. And then I even said, like, can they get bumped by a bus? Yes, yes, it's us. But ladies and gentlemen, I'm bidding you guys farewell and I'll see you again tomorrow at 1 p.m.